This is the General Government Subcommittee. It's April the 19th, Tuesday, 8:30, and I'm going to open a public hearing and possible work session on House Bill 5066, the Department of Revenue. We left off yesterday at the high-level agency review with Director Harchenko, and would welcome you again this morning. And I think that's where we'll begin.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Elizabeth Harchenko, Director of your Department of Revenue. With me today is Susan Browning, my deputy. Yesterday, you heard from the counties. They talked a lot about the property tax system. And towards the end of the day, yesterday, I just reminded you at the 50,000-foot level, we administer most of your tax systems. Fundamentally, your personal income tax program, which includes the withholding program where employers remit personal income tax on behalf of their employees. We administer your corporate income tax, tobacco taxes, and a variety of other taxes and charges on behalf of and for the benefit of specific programs. In state government, we also under contract collect some taxes for TriMet and the Lane Transit District, and collect debts owed to other state agencies, including the courts and about 120 other client agencies that we collect for. I'm actually prepared to go into the phase two presentation unless there are any questions about the materials that we've been disseminating over the last couple of months in response to the questions that came up during our phase one hearing.
I think you gave us a very comprehensive packet that was distributed to all the members. I would just add that that was one of the more comprehensive formats. I think sometimes during these hearings, as questions get asked and answers kind of dribble in, that you did a very good job of amalgamating all of the questions and answers in one place, and I just appreciated having the whole packet. So I think we would just invite you to begin directly into your summary.
Okay. In the binders that we distributed to you, we have a tab that's labeled phase two, and so that's where we're going to begin today.
Let's just stand at ease for a second and make sure we get everybody on the same page.
The budget presentation that they brought the first time.
I think we're going to stand at ease just long enough for everybody to get the right gear.
This is what they began with when the first part, and in this is the tab for this phase also.
I apologize, Director Harchenko. I'm also going to just leave briefly. I'll be right back.
I almost feel compelled to go do something.
You are prepared. You have
even the directors.
To session after our brief recess.
This one on phase two. Okay. Thank you.
We again invite Director Harchenko to begin her phase two high-level overview. And wherever it is we left off, Madam Director, I invite you to take us there and we'll all
In your Department of Revenue binder that we distributed years ago, there is a phase two tab, and we're going to start there. So page 2-4, major program changes and reorganizations. We've had really only one major reorganization within the department within the last 10 years, and that is in 1997, just before I arrived at the department. We were functionally organized on the income tax side. Audit was a division, collection was a division, and we decided to, the agency reorganized around the type of taxpayer they were serving. So the outcome of that atom smashing was a personal tax and compliance division where we have auditors and the collectors, all working together with the same group of taxpayers. And then for business taxpayers, we did the same thing with our business division. We had an administrative services division that sort of got parceled out into other parts of the department. We added a project management office in 2000, which in my view was one of the smartest things that has ever been done in the department. It wasn't my responsibility. One of our IT manager said we needed to do it, and it's just really made a huge difference for us in projects being on time, on budget, functional, allowed us to get through all of our Y2K work that we needed to get through in a timely way. And then just this past year, we've started to, I won't say centralize isn't quite the right word, but really coordinate much more intentionally the work of our IT staff, having all of our IT managers report to our CIO in order to take advantage of efficiencies with that staff. And those have all been, I think, very good internal improvements. We've also changed the composition of the agency in response to our interaction with the legislature and the budget process. And just over the last three sessions, we've given up positions that we believe we could because of productivity improvements, use of technology, and process improvement. And so in 2001, in our governor's process, we gave up 50 positions. And then in a couple of policy option packages, the legislature added collection and audit positions in order to enhance revenue generation. And we also had the creation of that tobacco task force in 2001. Last session, we gave up 10 positions as productivity gains, had some policy option packages, again, that added a number of collectors and auditors to enhance revenue generation, and I'll talk about that the productiveness of that policy option package in a bit, and also the tobacco task force was expanded. In the governor's rec for this session, we suggested eliminating, again, 25 positions due to efficiency gains because of process improvement and technology. And we are expecting, and we'll talk a little bit about in a few minutes in the budget drivers, some additional work coming from the legislature in the form of Senate Bill 480. Moving to page 2-5, the environmental factors and budget drivers that affect our income tax programs. Obviously, as the population of the state grows, our workload increases. As the economy changes, our workload changes. With the economy having had the significant downturn in 2001, collections was a little more difficult. We had more people that either failed to file or filed late or filed without paying. Other things that affect us, obviously tax law changes at the federal level that flow through and affect administration of the income tax here. We've got legislation pending in the Congress that would affect the corporate tax program, and I participate in a national organization that watches that and tries to give the congressional delegation feedback on the effect on Oregon of some of those proposed changes. Refundable credits, we've had the working family credit became refundable 2 years ago, and that created some interesting challenges for us. Yes,
sir. I'm just curious how you are able to provide input to the federal delegation. I think that's a very important linkage, and they need to know the effects of congressional action on Oregon. What mechanism do you engage to get that information to the delegation?
Madam Chair, it's all about relationships. The governor's office is very helpful in communicating with the congressional delegation sort of in an official way. But the Multi-State Tax Commission, of which Oregon is a member, and I'm the statutory representative to that commission for Oregon, meets in Washington twice a year. And during the spring meeting, we arrange to visit members of the congressional delegations. And so for the last 3 years, I have visited with staff and members of our congressional delegation when I've been back in D.C.
to just say, you know, here I am. These are issues that are on your plate that can affect the state. Here's some data that shows you what kind of impact the choices might have on Oregon. Here's some information about what the issues are. And if you have any questions, here's my phone number.
Great.
And so and it tends to end up being a real strong relationship with key staff members. And they call or email when they have questions. It's been really, really helpful.
Thank you. That's very reassuring that it's that smooth. Thank you.
And they do listen. I think it's really, I've been really impressed with how responsive the offices of our members of Congress and U.S. senators are when there are concerns coming out of the state.
Great.
And
thank you.
Legislators can have an impact there, too.
Thank you.
Let's see. Other things, I was just telling you a little bit, the Working Family Credit, when that became refundable, created some interesting challenges for us as we tried to make sure that before we sent out big refund checks that people were entitled to receive the funds using the internet.
Could you touch on that program just a little bit more?
Yeah, the Working Family Credit is a credit that's available to people below a certain income level for, I think it's up to about 40% of their child care costs if they're a full-time student or if they're working and have to pay child care in order to be able to do either of those two things.
But it is specifically child care.
Yes.
And they, I presume, have to attach evidence that bills were paid to a qualified child care provider. This isn't like paying grandma.
Well, the requirements are all in the statute, and I don't have them just right in my head, but the taxpayer needs to be able to show that they had... They qualify. Their child is a qualifying the person for whom they're claiming the child care credit is a qualifying dependent. That they're paying for the kind of services that the credit is designed to reimburse them for, and that we can identify who that child care provider is. That there really is one, and then a lot of people who wouldn't ordinarily file an income tax return because they don't have enough income to have to pay tax are eligible for the refundable credit. And so we had a group of people who hadn't had to file before now trying to file in order to claim the credit, be able to show all the documentation that shows that they were entitled. And so the process, we worked a lot with DHS to get some help on how to do a good process to make sure that we were getting those out to people who were entitled to have them.
What I was trying to link up, and it is fortuitous that Representative Smith should be coming in right now. I'm going to repeat the question because I would very much like the dialogue. You are providing a refundable child care tax credit to certain qualified taxpayers.
Correct.
And they have to prove certain things. Representative Smith has a legislative concept that is floating around right now that would talk about a lien registry. And I'm just trying to figure out, and I'm asking perhaps Representative Smith as well as you simultaneously, whether or not if Representative Smith's concept became law, if it would in some way affect this refundable child care tax credit if there was an outstanding lien against a taxpayer that was recorded in a registry somewhere.
Madam Chair, there are two pieces of information with respect to that. One is if there's something in our records where, because we do collect for other agencies, that if we know there's a debt that's owed by a citizen and we're going to make a payment to that citizen, we've got a system in place that checks to be sure that we're not making a payment where there's something owing to the state, we would go ahead and offset it. If there was a statewide lien register, my understanding of the concept, and Susan's a little more expert on this than I am, and maybe I should just go ahead and have
and
you
if
answer
I'm,
the
if I'm dragging you into a place where you're speculating,
We want to set up some kind of, I think we need to set up some additional system in, as to how we would use that lien register in relationship to administering a tax credit like that.
Because obviously the connection that I'm trying to make is that that in order to get cash back in some kind of a tax credit scenario, you would want, I think, to make sure that the taxpayer who was receiving this benefit had tidied up any other state arrearages. And maybe I'm stretching too far, and I would invite Representative Smith's comments if I'm heading off in a direction where your LC is. I'm very supportive of the LC, and it seems to me that this would be a mechanism to not only enforce compliance, but would also be some kind of a record to see that a benefit was not going out one door, and that some kind of a debt owing on the other side. And I'm just trying to feel out how that would work.
Well, I think that what I know about the lien register proposal, it's like version 1.0. It's getting the information up and accessible. And then we'd have to populate it, obviously. Agencies would need to be providing the information. And then we'd need to figure out what's the loop back into our operations of how to look at that information and then figure out what impact that has on administration of our programs, which would be then how the next phase would be how we would want to use that information.
Representative Smith.
Thank you. The one other benefit of the bill is that it really creates a whole bunch of other collectors out there for the state of Oregon, and this is an issue we raised in round one. When a bank or a credit institution runs a credit report and they see that you have an outstanding balance owed to the state of Oregon, and the bank requires that to be taken care of before they loan you money, it puts a lot of pressure on that person to take care of that issue, knowing that their commercial financing or consumer financing ability is pretty limited until they deal with that issue. And so I think it's an opportunity to raise money for the state. In terms of where that the bill is lying, as Dallas did a tremendous amount of work putting that together. I'm sitting there just holding it, waiting for direction from the chair and from the co-chairs. Well, you guys tell me where you want to go, and we'll do it. I just didn't want to get out front of you, Madam Chair.
As far as direction from the chair, I am perfectly happy to have you introduce the bill, and let's engage the debate.
Would you like a committee bill? There's no pride in ownership. To me, it's just a
good thing. We have the bill back.
Can we make it a committee bill, Dallas?
Yes, we can.
Okay, yes, that would be if we've got adequate support in the committee, and I see heads going up and down. So I think we have a committee bill and proceed from there. Dallas?
I will add this. We have to wait for full committee to introduce it. But we can start the thing ball rolling here. That's why we had originally given it to Representative Smith, because the House Rules Committee or the Senate Rules Committee are still sitting. And it's just a matter of timing when the full Ways and Means Committee would meet. I would like to take this opportunity, though. I can't take credit for the work.
No.
I just sent the email saying, what's happening, folks? Remember, we're... Oh. And the departments of the Attorney General, the Secretary of State's Office, the Department of Administrative Services, and the Department of Revenue collaboratively worked. And we just gave them a little legislative support, if you will, saying, boy, if you guys can put this together, you've got an audience that's willing to listen and move it forward. So I certainly can't take credit other than being your emissary, and they certainly did all the work, and it's very good. In my opinion, it's a good piece of work.
Representative Smith.
The one critique I have, and I have to say this, is this concept was introduced by a freshman 6 years ago, and because the person was a freshman, it was poo-pooed. And I just bring that forward, that there's a lot of good ideas out there.
Freshman B.
I think that's an object lesson in the legislative food chain, and we appreciate the tenacity of the freshman to keep after it. Senator Morris.
That's a clarification question. This will be a full Ways and Means bill.
Right. It has to come out of full Ways and Means. So if you wish it to be a committee bill, Ways and Means, we can certainly
we'll
get the bill back from Representative Smith.
Can it be this committee's bill?
It cannot be a subcommittee bill. Okay, it has to be a full, but we can certainly have it on record and get the LC down here for tomorrow morning. And you have it in the packet, but we can do the prep work so that it could be on full committee. But what we need is to go through our process, and bear with me while I go through this.
We'd appreciate you doing
that. We need the co-chair's approval for the LC and assignment to this subcommittee. And I think that can be easily done. And then they do that, and then officially then this subcommittee would take the action to recommend it be introduced as a committee bill, and we can then schedule it for the next full committee. And as you know, we're starting to get some budget bills and the like, so I think one will be on the horizon sooner than later. And then at that meeting, it can be caused to be introduced as a committee bill. I've checked with both the speaker's office, not speaker, the clerk's office and the Senate president, Senate secretary, and the rule is it's got to relate to it's got to be fiscally related, and they believe if it comes out of ways and means, essentially, with the assurance of the co-chairs that this is a fiscal matter, it's a fiscal bill.
Representative Smith.
I'd also share with the committee that I have not read the bill, and so I don't know if we want to take time to go through it, but I just have a copy of it.
Let's leave it on this basis, unless there's let me just croak this out and then we'll, unless there's objection from the committee, that we would leave it to Representative Smith to work with the professional staff to do the refinement and the mechanics necessary to bring it before this committee, and then we'd act on it and move it on to full. Senator Morissette.
I'm very supportive of the bill. We're not getting clear that there will be a fiscal impact, and starting with the full Ways and Means Committee, that will be taken care of, right? What is the fiscal impact?
Madam Chair, Senator Morissette, you're going to like this answer. We save money with this bill.
Okay.
We should save a lot, okay, because we're paying recording fees in the counties now, and the cost of doing this electronically is going to be very low. So the Secretary of State's office, I believe, has said they can. Susan, why don't you? She's been working.
This is a great piece of legislation. Yeah. Saves money.
Yeah. Could you imagine a freshman could come up with this?
No, and that's obviously why.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Susan Brown, Deputy Director. This is a really good bill. It achieves a lot of purposes, and we really support it. It helps with voluntary compliance, helps with compliance. It does save money, and, you know, it's a great tool. We're looking at Secretary of State got software from the state of North Carolina that they were able to use, and that's kind of turned the corner for them. And now they're talking about a transaction cost. They don't know yet, but somewhere in the range of maybe a dollar per transaction. We're paying right now $16. So you can see, you know, as we go forward, that this might save a lot of money. Plus, it's going to provide exactly what Representative Smith was talking about, a centralized database that anyone can actually access on the Internet. Secretary of State is adamant that this has to be electronic. That's how they're going to keep their costs down, is to have electronic database that you can query and look at it. And it will be available for all state agencies that have the ability to issue liens.
Senator Morse.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In addition to reducing the cost, can you speak to anticipated enforcement impacts that would influence collections?
You bet, Madam Chair, Senator Morris. We think it's going to be a great tool because the committee already had some discussion about the options and the potential it provides. But if an individual wants to refinance their car or their home or whatever, and the lenders are using this tool and go out there and see how, you know, what kind of debts this person already owes or what kind of liens they have out, that's leverage that the state gains to bring that person to the Department of Revenue to pay their debt or employment or the other state agencies that can use this. So it's a great, I think it's going to be a great tool. It's got a lot of benefits. And it's going to take us a little time to implement, but it sounds real doable.
Great tool, saves money, streamlines, and introduced by a freshman. Doesn't get any better than that.
Madam Chair, for the record, this is LC 3545. Just Anne-Marie asked that that be on the tape record. So what we are discussing is LC 3545.
Great, and it was included in the very comprehensive packet of responses prepared by the agency. And I think without objection, then we're going to move in the direction that I just outlined, ask Representative Smith and Dallas to work on the technical pieces of it, the mechanics, and bring it back to the committee as soon as you're able to bring it back. Good. Now,
one other.
Senator Morse.
In 99, there was a freshman who did introduce a great bill on performance measures. It was thoroughly vetted, went nowhere. But the next session, someone in the majority party passed it without objection. It works. It does work. It's
sadly, he was even in the majority party.
It's all time. Madam Director, if you would proceed ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The other big budget driver that we wanted to discuss in a little bit of detail with you beyond the statewide lien register is Senate Bill 480. That has passed the Senate. I don't know whether it's in Ways and Means or whether it's in the House Revenue Committee and then comes to Ways and Means. I'm not exactly sure exactly what order. But Senate Bill 480 is a package put together by the Senate Revenue Committee to enhance compliance.
This is just for the shorthand. This is the so-called tax amnesty.
Well, it's got tax amnesty in it. It's got actually two kinds of coming forward by taxpayers. One's called a voluntary compliance initiative that's focused on abusive tax shelters. And there's a fairly small very specific demographic group that is likely to have taken advantage of the abusive tax shelters, usually very, very high-income individuals or corporations. So there's a piece for that. Then there's a more general amnesty for people who have either not filed and we have not found them and contacted them, or who have underreported their liability and we have not identified that through the audit process. So those are sort of the two really big pieces in that bill. But there's also some additional withholding requirements that will, one example would be withholding by title companies on real property transactions where the seller is from outside the state of Oregon, and any gain that they might owe tax on and would be paid and out, and it would be probably pretty challenging for us to find them. There would be a withholding requirement. There's a requirement for posting of delinquent debt, which we believe the LC that we've just been talking about would probably completely encompass. There's an authorization for the department to work with licensing boards to determine compliance of people who get licenses to engage in trades or professions from the state of Oregon. There's a provision whereby the department would be authorized to collect local income taxes if requested by a local government if the income tax met certain requirements in terms of parallelism with Oregon's income tax structure, and the unit of government is prepared to pay the cost of development of the system. In addition to the real estate withholding, we've got there was a provision in the bill that would require withholding on rollover of certain kind of retirement accounts, distributions from certain retirement accounts, and then giving the department the authority to require withholding on other kinds of transactions where we feel it will assist in compliance. So it's quite a comprehensive package of compliance tools, and we've got we've sat down in the agency in working with the staff at the Legislative Revenue Office to look at, and with the committee to look at, okay, we've got all this work you'd like us to do. What sequence can we get it done so that we can get it all done this biennium? So we've, and there is some fiscal impact on Senate Bill 480. Susan, what's the ballpark fiscal on that?
On 480? Maybe I can address that.
I ask a professional staff to comment, please.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I don't know what the fiscal is on the bill, but the bill is in the House now. It has a referral to House Revenue Committee with a subsequent referral to Ways and Means, so it can be dealt with then. The fiscal can be dealt with in the bill.
It does have a fiscal. It also raises a substantial amount of revenue. So that's coming to you, and that's something that is going to be a driver for us, is to get that work done. We, on the budget side, or on the property tax side, we talked a lot yesterday about the, with the counties, about the county assessment function funding account, also known as CAFA, the grant program and Lane County. And maybe now would be a good time for me to just share with you, Madam Chair, you had asked about the cost of the study that we did for Lane County. And do we have a handout for everybody?
I believe that was.
We've got a single sheet overview. Says response to subcommittee questions, and it's dated from yesterday. Half an overview. It's a one-pager. we review all the county's budgets each year, and the county governing bodies submit grant requests to us with their proposed budget for their assessment and taxation function. If they meet the standards, then we certify the county to get its share of the grant for the year. If the expenditures are not adequate, then we are in contact with the county through the assessor's office and identify the deficiencies, and counties then are able to submit an amended budget in order to be eligible for their grant. I believe, at least in the time that I've been associated with the program, we have had serious conversations about inadequate funding with four different counties. Lane County is the one that has had the most difficulty, as Jim Gangle explained to you yesterday. And so for Lane County, because of the really serious challenges they faced, we agreed with the assessor to do the study. Typically, administration of the program costs us about $10,000 a year. It's about 300 hours of staff time. The comprehensive review of Lane County was unique, and that was over 2,800 staff hours and cost us over $90,000.
I guess I'd need to stop and ask you a question there. Did you need the study to convince Lane County that they had a problem?
I think there were two dimensions of this, and Karen is here, my property tax administrator is here to get into any more detail if you would like. But Lane County had ongoing issues, and I know the assessor knew about it, and I think that the commission was struggling, as the two commissioners who testified yesterday, struggling with trying to balance a whole lot of other demands in their budget, and things were just falling further and further behind. So I think as an educational tool for the commission, the study was very, very helpful.
Well, and I guess my only point is this is a $91,000 educational tool for the commission. And we heard a lot of testimony from the counties yesterday about why this partnership is important. And it seems to me if we're spending $91,000 to bring one of the partners along, that, and I'm sorry to be so blunt about this, if we have to spend $91,000 to bring one of the partners along, that's a problem. And I would hope that we wouldn't have to do that again, that we heard very compelling testimony yesterday about why this was important to do, and I would just hope that the counties realize that there's a quid pro quo here, and we shouldn't have to spend this kind of money to convince our partners that there was an issue.
Madam Chair,
correct me if I'm wrong.
You're not wrong about the statements that you've made about the partnership and how we ought to be interacting with our partners. I think the situation is always challenging when we have very independent elected officials at the county level managing those budgets, trying to make those calls, and many of them are uninformed about the operations of the assessment and taxation function and the effect that that has not only on the county but the cities within the county. And so it is an education.
Is there anything out of this $91,000 that can be used as part of an educational tool should this scenario arise again?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
In another county?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah, we learned a lot from the study. The county and the commission learned a lot from the study. And now I would say that as long as any one of those commissioners is still on the commission going forward, we aren't going to have any problems in Lane County because they do understand.
Madam Chair, I'm sorry I missed the Lane County presentation yesterday. The two former senators appear yesterday that are on the Lane County commission.
Madam Chair, Senator Morissette, we had a commissioner, Leslie Lewis from Yanhill County, and Tony White from
We didn't have Lane County.
No, the Lane County assessor was.
Okay, we have two former county commissioner legislators on the Lane County Commission, so they should be aware of some of these things.
I think they learned a lot from the conversations I've had with Karen about the interaction with the County Budget Committee and the commissioners, that the study was something that was very, very well received. They really became aware of how much they didn't know and how crucial the function was.
And I want to make sure that, for the benefit of a colleague, I'm not picking on any particular county. This just happened to be the county that was in the barrel.
Lane County needs to be picked on.
That's okay for you to say. Okay, please continue.
We're all struggling together. I would like to make a more general comment about this funding stream. The county assessment function funding account comes, again, as we discussed yesterday, from a portion of the interest that's paid on delinquent property taxes and a recording fee on documents that are recorded with the county clerk. Over the years, particularly because of the boom in the housing market and low interest rates and a lot of refinancing, the amount of funds that have come into that account have grown over time. The department is able to keep 10% of that total pot to use to pay for valuation of industrial properties and valuation of utility properties, as well as the administration of the grant program itself. It looks like the refinancing boom has slowed down. Interest rates are starting to go up, and the recording fees and the delinquent interest have leveled off, and projections are that they may have peaked and they will start going down. We still are going to see, we think, an adequate amount coming to the department to help fund those functions. But in 2007 to 2009, this could become an issue in our budget. We do still fund, in part, that function with general fund. And so it's a blend of these two funding streams, and there may be more reliance in later years on general fund for that function if, in fact, the projections that we're seeing bear out. So that's just an alert for 2007-09.
Director Arshenko, I'm going to take this opportunity, being mindful of the time, to ask you to move ahead quickly, get into the policy option packages.
Right.
It's my intention to ask the staff to distribute the staff recommendation and to begin work session on this budget today. And maybe at this point in time, I'll ask the staff to distribute the recommendation, but to ask you to move ahead,
okay,
please.
If you'll turn to page 2-12 in the revenue binder. This is the first of our policy option packages. This is the willful tax avoidance, which corresponds to the portion of Senate Bill 480 that's focused on abusive tax shelters. This package would add 22 positions, audit staff, withholding staff, support, and a manager. And would allow us to focus on some very sophisticated tax shelter schemes. Would allow us to engage in partnerships with other states and the IRS and compliance efforts in this area, and it will be complemented by that part of Senate Bill 480 that's related to the Voluntary Compliance Initiative. The package will cost $2.6 million. And generate gross revenue of $6.1 million for a net gain to the general fund of $3.5 million. Are there any questions about that package?
Representative Smith.
You've talked with me about this, and I appreciate you coming to my office. Would it make more sense to do an education outreach, or are these sophisticated folks who are trying to structure a system to get away from paying taxes?
Madam Chair, Representative Smith, the kinds of tax avoidance mechanisms that would be targeted by this are things that are very, very sophisticated. Very, very high-income taxpayers, very sophisticated tax advisors engaged in developing and marketing these transactions. It's a national problem.
It's a problem at the federal level as well as among the states.
This isn't the entrepreneur that structured their company wrong and is making a payment to the wrong line item.
No.
This is somebody with a lot of visa stamps to Bahrain.
Got it.
These are
transactions. I'll fill you in on this.
I'll have to look that up on the internet.
Madam Chair, Representative Smith, these are transactions that are intentionally structured to significantly reduce or eliminate tax liability that's created by very, very high income producing.
So just so I feel good, though, it's very naive then of me to say an education outreach would solve this problem.
I would say that's true.
Thank you. Okay.
Any other questions about that?
Any other? Yeah. We'll move on to the next one.
Okay. The next one is on page 2-13. As I mentioned a little bit earlier, we've seen a significant growth in our income tax receivables over time. There are a number of reasons why the receivables continue to grow. The economy was one piece. Our aggressive pursuit of people and entities that have failed to file returns is another contributor. And we were asking for a package of revenue agents, support positions, and a manager to generate about $17 million over the next biennium. The package would cost $2.5 million, and the net gain would be $14.5 million. It would be aimed at collecting tax that's been assessed but not paid. This package would be complemented also by the general amnesty portion of Senate Bill 480.
The question that I guess I would have for you, Director Hershenko, is I think we sat in this same room a session ago and talked about your projections for how well the enhanced tobacco task force was going to go and missed the projections. Could you offer the committee some reassurance on what your methodology was for arriving at the projections in this policy option package? And give us confidence that if we make this level of expenditure, we're going to see this level of return?
Yes, Madam Chair. We have a lot of experience collecting income taxes. We have a lot of experience in our personal income tax program and our corporate tax program. And in all the time I've been with the department, when we've made a commitment to the legislature in the income tax, we have delivered on that commitment. And, in fact, when going back a couple of pages to page 2-9 in the packet, you'll see the production that we are expecting for this biennium for the package you gave us last biennium is that we had made a commitment of $20.2 million in additional general fund, and we're on track at this point to collect $22 million. The tobacco situation, we've learned a lot from that situation. The way that we did the estimate, the newness of the program, and just a variety of other things. As I look back on it, we should have looked at it very, very differently. But we have a long track record, and I think Dallas can tell you he's evaluated our accounting system and the way that we track the revenues that are produced by additional positions that we've been given over the years, and that we have a pretty sound methodology for doing that.
Representative Smith, and then I'm going to invite Dallas to make any comments.
I'll go where the committee wants to go, but I would remind that bill that's going to come forward is effectively going to make every capable creditor in the state of Oregon an agent for the Department of Revenue. And a free agent for the state of Oregon. And so I'll go where we want to go here, but I almost think that bill will do more for collections than having revenue agents sitting in Salem.
Well, Madam Chair, members of the committee, I was going to follow on Ms. Hershenko's comments. Yes, the names and I both went over there to review their methodology for setting targets for their collection and auditors, and then
how they evaluate and measure progress. It's integral to the way they manage the department. They do set these targets. They have reasons for setting them. They have different targets for different classifications and workload, and they track it, and they manage by exception. If someone's not meeting it or something's happening, they look into it and why. And this, so they build these projections off of that, and then they measure, they monitor against that. We will be making a recommendation with respect to a budget note that they return the emergency board report on that, on collections to that. But yes, at the direction of the co-chairs before session started, we were out there looking at that, and it is an integral part of their operation and managing their operation. So these projections on revenue collections just aren't devised on the back of an envelope.
Senator Morse.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The lien registry, as I understand it, will affect the known problem. It's the unknown problem that we need to get at. And what's part of this package, as I understand it, is we don't know until we actually investigation.
Well, we have, Madam Chair, Senator Morse, we have two sets of issues. There is the unknown problem. There is those people who we haven't audited, who have underreported, and those people who haven't filed that we haven't identified. The known problem is, which is the growing delinquent tax debt, is people who file a return, report they owe tax, and don't pay it, or who we audit or we locate and determine a tax liability and assert that tax liability, and it isn't paid. And so the lien register will complement the work of this group. The thing about the lien register is going to take a while for folks to get to know about it. It'll certainly be something that our agents will be able to talk to taxpayers about and say, if you don't have arrangements made, if you haven't paid this or you don't have an arrangement made for a pay plan, your name's going to go on the web. And for some, that's going to be inducement enough to, well, maybe I better get this, you know, taken care of. But it'll take a while, I think, probably before creditors realize it's out there and how to access it and whether they want to use it for whatever purpose they're extending credit. So it's a tool that's in the mix, and it's going to be valuable, and we'll watch and see, you know, how that works for us as well. But we've got, this is to deal with some of the known problem of a growing amount of delinquent tax debt. We have quite an extensive paper in the last big packet that we gave you, the packet that was dated April 13th. There's a report on unpaid tax debt for you, how we collect it, how it arises, how much of it is collectible, in what way, and it's a pretty comprehensive overview of the situation that we face right now with our unpaid tax debt. The purpose of this group is to address on the personal income tax, which of course is general fund, some of that growth and to manage that better. And of course, we're continuing to do our regular process improvement, use of technology, enhancement of tools. Some of the tools we get in Senate Bill 480, they'll come on late in this biennium, but then they'll be in place permanently going forward, and these folks will have the ability to use that as well.
I think the single most important thing that you all can do is to have an aggressive enforcement. There is nothing more corrosive, in my opinion, than taxpayers' belief that somebody is getting away with something, where responsible citizens are stepping up, honoring their obligation to pay their taxes, and that somehow others that are scofflaws are walking away from that obligation with impunity. So I applaud anything you're doing to assure debt collection and compliance.
Thank you, Senator. We try and use every tool that's available to us, private sector partners as well as our own folks, and we try and use tools appropriate to the situation. We have some people who are deliberately not paying, choosing not to pay. We're going to use a different tool set than with somebody who's maybe had a major medical calamity in their family and are unable to pay their bills. So we have a nice range of tools that allow us to deal with all those different situations.
Senator Morse and Representative Smith.
Madam Chair, this may be a question for Dallas. The $20.6 million now that, you know, we approved these policy option packages and there's an anticipated falls in revenue, Has that been accommodated in the co-chair's anticipation of expendable revenues?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, yes. What's the revenues from these two packages are already included, A, in the revenues in the revenue forecast, and the expenditure of these funds to achieve those revenues are provided for in the co-chair's budgets.
We better do this then.
With that admonition, please move ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The third policy option package is related to our other agency clients. We have a rapidly growing collection of delinquent debt accounts for 273 state entities. 285,000 accounts worth over $212 million that have been assigned to us for collection. The other agency account unit has not grown over time in spite of the workload growth, and basically are asking to set up another unit to work other agency program. The package would cost $2.3 million. We would expect to increase the other fund revenue that we return to other state agencies by $24 million for a net gain of $21.7 million. The way that we are compensated for this work is we establish a percentage that we withhold from every dollar we collect and withhold that and return the net proceeds to the state agency for which we're collecting. If at the end of, I think we reconcile those costs annually, and if we have withheld more than our actual costs, then we send the rest back to those agencies. So it's our cost is paid and the agency's debt, everything above our actual cost of collection. So this would be another unit that would help us deal with that that growing amount of delinquent debt that's been assigned to the Department for Collection. We're the stop between that agency client and a private collection agency under the 3509, was that?
House Bill 3509.
Yeah. Two sessions back or three sessions back, every state agency has to turn that over to a private collection agency if they have received no payment or there's been no action on an account for 12 months. And so agencies will work accounts. They send them to us. We work them. If we get no action, we send them back, and then they go out to private collection. So the accounts are moving through the system, and we're kind of that middle slice. We offer a full range of services, offset against income tax refunds, garnishment, liens, pay plans, everything we use in the personal income tax, all the tools we use in the personal income tax.
Representative Smith.
What about the student commission, student loan folks? Who collects for them?
Well, as long as that we answered that question specifically because you asked it in February,
yeah.
The Oregon Student Assistance Commission has been decommissioned.
The
Scholarship Commission no longer exists. We did collect debt for them, but when the commission was ceased to exist, we returned all their collection accounts, and a private company has purchased those accounts.
I just want to share an issue with you really quick and with this committee. I had a constituent who had a large delinquency to the student commission, and he showed up at my door, front door of my home, with all of his tax returns showing that he makes limited money. But every one of them had a refund to him. And the question I asked is, well, are you getting your refund? He said, well, yeah. And yet he had this large payable. And I couldn't figure out why there wasn't that connection.
Well, one might have been if they hadn't turned it over to us yet. Because if they had, those refunds would have been offset. If they hadn't turned it, if they were still working with him and collecting directly.
They were.
And if they had not turned the account over to us, then we would not have known about it, and we would not offset the refund.
I think there's another area there, and this individual, without getting too confidential, and this thing was over a decade and a half old.
Well, the state policy in the statute right now is that state agencies have the ability to use our services. They are not required to use our services.
Our problem was with them, not with you folks.
Correct.
Okay.
I think, though, that might be an interesting not for this committee because I don't think it'll come within our jurisdiction, but it would certainly be interesting to know how debt collection is going within the student assistance realm, given that there's discussion in this building right now about greatly increasing grant and loan programs, to know how they're performing. In my private life, I sit on the board of a charitable foundation, and we have discovered that it is getting increasingly difficult to collect on student loans, which I find astonishing. But
I can tell this committee I'm still paying my student loans, and I'm on my 14th year paying student loans.
Anyway, we might want to investigate that at some point. Senator Morissette.
Well, I guess I'm wondering if this other agency, the other agency accounts, i.e., as we turn over, are we talking about those being on a registry as well?
Madam Chair, Senator Morissette, the way that the statewide lien register draft has been developed, every state agency that has any debt owed to it can record that on this lien register.
So that these will also then
Madam Chair, Senator Morissette, the way the statewide lien registry bill has been drafted, if the state agency has lien authority, it could be posted out there on the lien registry. So all the Department of Revenue's debt would be posted out there. And I would believe...
The OA? The OA debt?
I'm not positive, Senator Morissette, as to whether or not the OAA debt would be posted out there. We can find out.
Dallas, perhaps you can help us?
I can. Since OAA activities has warrant authority, it can post it on there.
Through the Department of Revenue?
Through the Department of Revenue, yes.
Because we do, Senator Morissette, we do collect the other agency accounts just as if there are accounts.
Yes.
We can't use all of the tools, some of the other more aggressive tools, but we do issue liens and garnishments. So, yes, I could post it out there, too.
Representative Smith.
Thank you. One last question, and then I'll refrain it so we can move forward. Do you folks have relationships with Economic and Community Development Department in terms of collection of delinquent loans?
Madam Chair, Representative Smith, I don't know whether it's collected economic development. We included
a list
in the big packet. Susan's going to rifle through and see if she can find whether there are.
Why don't we do this rather than take the time? I'd be interested in
economic
development and housing and community services.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'd really be interested if you could send me information on how the relationship works if they were to work with you, if they're not.
Happy to.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. That's important. And again, I ask that the answer come through the professional staff and be distributed to the whole committee.
Mm-hmm.
All right. I think we're ready for policy option 161.
This is on page 2-15. This is a really pretty tiny little thing. Was it the 2003 session or the 2001 session?
2003?
Yeah. There was a new lodging tax, 1% lodging tax that's dedicated to tourism, and we're administering that program. We're under the statute that was passed, the department was authorized to retain up to 2% of the receipts for administration, but we didn't get limitation, I think. So the problem here is that we didn't get other fund limitation. We need some other fund limitation and a designated position to administer the program. So this is a $90,191 other fund limitation request and one public service representative position.
Do you know if some of the squabbles about what qualifies under the lodging are getting resolved in what venue? Whether my tent qualifies on the beach?
Madam Chair, when we first brought this program up, the bill had been in and had languished, and then all of a sudden got legs right at the end of the session. And so there were some technical difficulties with the drafting of the bill, and the lodging industry folks understood that it was going to operate in a particular way, and then when we sat down with the attorneys and figured out what the language actually did, it was a little different than their understanding, and we worked through most of those issues. The understanding I have right now is that the tourism division does have a bill in to do some technical corrections, which do deal with some of these issues of vacation homes and some of the other direct competitors with motels and hotels that don't come under the umbrella of the legislation as it was enacted. But I think tourism and the lodging industry have that fairly well in hand, and they'll be working through the substantive committee on those issues.
Okay. All right. That concludes your policy option packages. I'm going to ask for comments from Ms. Ames. I think there is a handout at everyone's place that we will be following along as she goes through that.
I'm Linda Ames. I'm with Department of Administrative Services. This is just a very high-level context piece for you to highlight issues in the governor's budget. And this committee, I think, really understands the background materials. I think I'm going to go ahead and skip on through to page 7, where I did want to point out there is a 32% increase in general fund in this budget since 03-05, and I wanted to be sure that if that came up, or you could explain what's going on. Remember last session, we took out about $25 million general fund and we replaced it with the tobacco tax. And in this column for 0305 legislatively approved, that is actually as of April 04, so that's before we had to backfill some of that general fund. In the governor's budget, we do replace that $25 million GF since the tobacco tax fiasco didn't really work out like we expected. So that is the bulk of that increase. Now, of course, there's some increase there because of the enhancement packages.
Any questions?
And then on the next couple pages, on page 8, there's just a couple of these issues I wanted to highlight. The first issue is exactly that. There is in 0507 dollars, a $26 million increase in GF and corresponding decrease in other funds limitation. The department did mention we took out some positions in dollars because of increased efficiencies and productivity. We also eliminated all of Tobacco Task Force 2. That's about $4.7 million other funds. That's 14 positions now here at the department. It also includes some positions over in Department of Justice and in State Police. Then the enhancements, I think we really already went over. And on page 9, I just wanted to draw your attention. There were several errors in crafting this budget, and we're just trying to get them cleaned up here and to reassure you that we're not doing additional cuts to the agency. So when we did this whole, replaced all of these positions throughout the entire agency, we had to shift from the other fund tobacco tax over to GF, and a fairly small calculation added up to quite a few dollars of error. So we need to take out $332,000 of GF out of their budget and add in 466 other funds. The position corrections, we took out FTE in the budget, but we didn't get the position counts pulled out properly. So, again, it's not new cuts. It's just cleanup. And then, finally, in the elderly rental assistance program, we're recommending that you pull $1 million of general fund out of this budget. And, again, to be very clear, this is not a program cut. This is simply that under current statute, the agency will serve all eligibles with less dollars than we put in their budget. So instead of $9 million, they expect to only need $8
million. Representative Smith.
On the pulling out of that $1 million, then that'll go into the overall pool of general fund, not
Madam
somewhere
Chair.
Else in the department.
Right, exactly. This would simply come out of the budget and be available generally.
Although I think, Representative Smith, just for the record, there has been enthusiasm in a number of quarters to see some linkage with this and other senior services. No more specific than that. Does that conclude your comments, Ms. Ames?
Yes, it does.
Great. Dallas?
Do you want to close public hearing
and
go to work session?
That's fine. That's a great idea. Okay. With Ms. Ames' comments, I am going to close the public hearing and open a work session on House Bill 5066. And you have before you the LFO recommendations. I'm going to ask Dallas for some general comments, and then I would anticipate working through these section by section, soliciting motions and acting or not acting on the recommendations.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, in general, we will be recommending approval of the policy option packages that are included in the governor's recommended budget. As you know, the revenue is anticipated in the budget, the statewide budget, as is the cost of bringing in those additional revenues. We will be recommending those technical adjustments, which frees up an extra $300,000 in general fund that hadn't been expected. We will be making the standard recommendations on the Attorney General's rate and the public employees' retirement system reduction. We will also be making recommendations as to performance measures. Understand that we still haven't finished the Department of Administrative Services budget, and there may be, and there are some other assessment budgets out there that, upon passage, may cause additional adjustments to this budget, which we would make in a subsequent cleanup bill later on. And those would be for Department of Administrative Services, possibly other assessment agencies like Secretary of State, Employment Relations Board, and the like. But we can accommodate those adjustments without harming all those Rs, actually reduce costs to the agencies that we could simply reduce. They would have no programmatic effect. So
great.
With that, I will go through the specific recommendations.
Please, I think, Dallas, unless you give me advice to the contrary, that we will do it section by section, ask you to give the recommendation, then act on the recommendations, and just soldier through it in the remaining 50 minutes.
Sure.
Okay. Is that agreeable to the committee?
Yes.
Okay.
You have also attached to this is the printout of all the sections, the summary, which shows overall the recommendations will result in a reduction of the general fund of a little over $2 million and an increase in other funds limitation of $345,000. And then the detail follows the presentation here, executive section and the like. So the first recommendation is to the executive section. Reduces general fund by $12,409 for the public employees retirement system rate reduction and $396 for the attorney general rate reduction. Reduce other funds limitation by $1,337 for the public employees retirement system rate reduction. Also for a technical adjustment, a general fund reduction of $163 for personal services and an increase in other funds limitation by $163. Again, this goes back to cleaning up that other fund to general fund shift resulted from the tobacco fund being used last session. So as they were putting the budget together, now finalizing it, we realized we need to make some of these technical adjustments. Also, with respect to performance measures, approve performance measure 11 relating to the employee satisfaction with work environment and add two standard performance measures on customer satisfaction. Those I've put in here, number 13 and 14. Those are the ones we are putting in all agencies.
Okay. Any discussion of the LFO recommendation? I would entertain then a motion to approve the LFO recommendations with respect to the executive session.
So moved.
Senator Representative Smith moves the LFO recommendations with respect to the executive section. Any objection? Approved as recommended by LFO. Dallas?
The next section is the general services section. This is kind of a holding account for some expenditure limitation and appropriation. We're recommending a reduction in general fund by $211 for the public employees retirement system rate reduction and an additional $2,150 for AG rate reduction. That's all for that section.
Any question with respect to that recommendation? Representative Smith moves the LFO recommendation with respect to the general services section. Any objection? It's approved as recommended. Dallas?
Okay. The Information Processing Division, a number of recommendations here. Reduce general fund by $186,321 for the PERS rate reduction. And reduce other funds limitation by $15,113 for the PERS rate reduction. This section has no Attorney General's costs in it, so there will be no recommendation for AG rate.
There's some technical adjustments, reducing general fund for personal services by $49,972 and increase other funds limitation by the same amount to correct for that fund shift, technical adjustments for tobacco tax. Then, for services and supplies, recommending an increase in general fund appropriation by $115,751 and an increase in other funds limitation for services and supplies by $18,623. This is to correct for an error made by the Budget Management Division. When, during development of GRB, there was a miscalculation on some inflation factors. So this is strictly for services and supplies in this division. Also, this is the top, a technical non-fiscal adjustment to eliminate 8 positions, 0.15 FTE. The money is not included in the budget, but they still remain in the, it's not personal, it's PICS, the position in information control system. So this is to get it officially on record so that they can adjust those records. Also approve performance measure number 9 relating to the income tax refunds and number 10 relating to electronic filing of tax returns and number 12 relating to staff training. It should be noted that the department has changed its target and presentation for number 10, which had to do with electronic filing of tax returns. That target was a bit confusing, and they have submitted a new graph in their information. Essentially, the performance measure is fine. It was just the target and the way it was presented. It was confusing. So,
okay. Any questions with respect to the LFO recommendation on the Information Processing Division? There being none, Representative Smith moves the LFO recommendation for the Information Processing Division. Any objection? Without objection, the LFO recommendation is adopted. Dallas.
Yes, the Property Tax Division, Madam Chair. Here we're recommending a reduction in general fund of $68,037 for the PERS rate reduction and another reduction of $83,698 for the Attorney General rate reduction. Additionally, reducing the other funds expenditure limitation by $30,599 for the PERS rate reduction and $6,985 for the Attorney General rate reduction. This division has both general fund operations and other fund. The technical adjustment here is to reduce the general fund for personal services by $969 and increase other funds limitation by a like amount. That's that technical adjustment. Also, we're recommending approval of performance measure number 2 relating to property tax collections and modified number 3 to read percent of assessor's maps digitized in a GIS format. So be a little clearer as to the recommendation. And also to delete performance measure number 8 as it will be replaced by those 2 that were added with a customer survey, satisfaction survey.
Any questions with respect to the LFO recommendation on the Property Tax Division? There being none, Representative Smith moves the LFO recommendation for the Property Tax Division. Any objection? Without objection, the LFO recommendation is adopted. Dallas.
The next section, Madam Chairman, is the Personal Tax and Compliance Division. We're recommending a reduction of general fund by $225,687 for the PERS rate reduction and $66,443 for the Attorney General rate reduction. Also a reduction in other funds limitation by $4,318 for the PERS rate reduction. Another technical adjustment. This is a significant one. Reduce general fund for personal services by $396,904 and increase the other funds limitation by a like amount to correct for the fund shift with the tobacco tax compliance effort. Also a technical non-fiscal adjustment to add one position that is funded in the budget but was not included as a position in the position information control system.
Got one more.
And approve the performance measures numbers 1, 4, 5, 6, and 7. These all relate to personal income taxpayer collections, assistance, and compliance efforts.
Any questions with respect to the LFO recommendation in the Personal Tax and Compliance Division? There being none, Representative Smith moves the LFO recommendation for Personal Tax and Compliance Division. Any objections? Without objection, the LFO recommendation is adopted. Dallas.
In the business division, we're recommending a reduction of general fund by $59,925 for the PERS rate reduction and another $26,529 for the attorney general rate reduction. A reduction also of other funds limitation of $53,438 for the PERS rate reduction and $9,600 for the AG rate reduction. The technical adjustment then, also a reduced general fund by, for personal services by $341 and increase other funds by the same amount as a technical adjustment. Those are, there are no performance measures related to this one.
Representative Smith.
I'm going to have a motion, but I do want to make a statement. The chair allowed me to interject myself into DAS's department on a project they're working on in which they're working with the Secretary of State on trying to create a website that's business-friendly. And they mentioned you folks as one of those participants in that work group. The Department of Administrative Services is going to be working during the interim on creating a section, if you will, that will help entrepreneurs figure out how to create their first job. And the technical assistance that goes with how do you do the payroll for that first job. And I'm going to ask if you folks will make sure you're proactively at the table trying to make sure that gets created between now and next session. So, with that,
Chair, Representative Smith would be delighted.
Terrific. Thank you. With that, a motion.
Great. All right. With that, Representative Smith moves the LFO recommendation for the business division. Any objection? The LFO recommendation for the business division is adopted. And I'm going to stop here for just a moment. Director Harshenko, we've moved through a number of divisions of your operation, and I did not do you the courtesy of asking if you had any comments. I would invite your retroactive comments if there's anything that you'd like to go back to.
Madam Chair, Dallas shared his recommendations with us. We have no concerns about them at all. It's pretty straightforward stuff.
Thank you. I apologize for my lack of courtesy to you. All right. With that, Dallas, Multi-State Tax Commission.
Madam Chair, I'm recommending approval of this as it is. This is a non-limited authority, and this is one, remember how I've always said we were putting it under limitation, but this truly is outside of the control of the department. They have to record this cost when they become aware of it, and so we're recommending it as proposed in the governor's recommended budget, and that it remain non-limited authority.
Any questions about the LFO recommendation with respect to the Multi-State Tax Commission? There being none, Representative Smith moves the LFO recommendation for the Multi-State Tax Commission. Is there objection? Without objection, the LFO recommendation is adopted. Dallas.
Yes, the Elderly Rental Assistance Program. We are recommending the reduction that the Department of Administrative Services mentioned of $1 million to reflect the updated expectation of demand for rental assistance. Again, this ties with what we did with earlier in the session where we reduced the appropriation by $1 million from the prior biennium because the demand wasn't there because of the constraints on the program.
And I think we would like to get it on the record for both the benefit of the committee, the agency, and our colleagues in the building that this is in no way an attempt to take anything away from senior programs, that all eligibles can still be served, and that savings realized here we would attempt as best possible to find a nexus with other services to seniors. Representative Smith, any questions with regard to the LFO recommendation? There being none, Representative Smith moves the LFO recommendation with respect to the Elderly Rental Assistance Program. Objections? Without objection, the LFO recommendation is adopted. Dallas.
Yeah, the Senior Citizen Property Tax Deferral Program, Chair, members of the committee, that has a dollar of general fund in it. We are recommending approval of that as a placeholder dollar. We're also recommending that the budget report reflect the direction to the department to transfer $10 million from this account to the general fund by June 30th of 2007. Economic analysis and projections indicate that there will be sufficient funds in this account to maintain the program after this transfer. This transfer would be at the end, just before the end of the biennium in 2007. We have shared this with the department. They have said, well, they would like to be able to discuss this with the 2007 legislature if it looks that the November 2007 payment might be in jeopardy. But at this point, the projections are that the jeopardy is not attached to November 2007 payments, and we've provided for some cushion in there. We've worked with the, again, legislative revenue office and their projections and their economists. They just like to leave the door open to come back to the legislature in 2007.
I was going to invite you to make a comment given the nature of this request. Director Harshenko, please.
Madam Chair. Our comfort with this transfer is conditioned upon no other legislation in the building that is aimed at tapping this fund pass. If it does, then we would be extremely anxious because there are at least two other bills, and we've alerted Dallas to the bill numbers, that have looked at the same resource to fund some specific programs. So there's only one amount of dollars to move, and so if it moves this way, it can't move through any of that other legislation.
Any comments or questions? Representative Crump.
Yeah, thank you. I'm going to object to this just because I feel strongly that these dollars could be used somewhere else other than going into the general fund. So I actually support one of those other bills that's moving through the process, so I'll just be a no on this particular piece. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other comments? Okay. Any questions about the LFO recommendation with respect to the senior citizens property tax deferral? There being none, Representative Smith moves approval of the LFO recommendation with respect to the senior citizens property tax deferral. Representative Krupp is a no. Any other objections? There being none, the LFO recommendation is approved with Representative Krupp noted as a no.
Madam Chair,
Dallas.
I would like to add something to that the budget report, we will work on this, reflected the wishes of the, without making it a budget, no, I think we can put it just in the discussion of the budget report, but that the department be requested to return to the emergency board and explain, I'm thinking sometime around late 06, about a year and a half down the road, fourth quarter of calendar 06, to explain, describe where they stand with respect to collections that were anticipated under packages 151, which is willful tax avoidance, 152, which is the increased personal income tax collections, and also 162, which is the other agency account collection efforts. Although that doesn't go to general fund, that does benefit other agencies. And both of them, you know, they were providing additional resources for those increased collection and activities and enforcement activities. And I think we could achieve it without a budget note. We can put it in the discussion, and the committee agreed, subcommittee agreed, and that the department has agreed. May I be so bold as to say that the department agrees?
Actually, I'd like Director Harshenko to agree on the record.
Madam Chair, we would be very happy to report to the emergency board on the status of all of our policy option packages and the status of the work under Senate Bill 480.
Thank you very much, and I think the record will reflect that willingness to come back, and we can work out the scheduling for the appearance before the e-board with the professional staff. Any questions about that LFO recommendation and the director's willingness to come back with a report? Thank you very much. Senator Morris.
Just some observations. These are just very rough numbers, but the past 8 years, the general fund appropriation has increased about 2.3% per year. All funds about 3.6%. So well within an acceptable range of increase, you know, given the population increase and the increasing demands for the agency. So I would compliment the agency in that respect. The other thing I would like to share, and this was information that I think came just to me. We continually hear the statement made that businesses do not pay an adequate amount of the tax money that is spent, that is disproportionate to personal. If you add the flow-through entities, which are the S-Corps, partnerships, the LLPs, the LLCs, and sole proprietors, the actual corporate tax paid in the year 2002 was approximately 2.54 times that which was reported as a CEQA reporting. And this was based on information that Elizabeth. So just to put it in the context of the businesses, there are business activities out there that are contributing tax income. And if I've misconstrued this, Elizabeth, I would like to be corrected on that. But
Madam Chair, Senator Morse, I think the point that you're making, that business takes many forms, not just C corporation,
right,
is very important to be aware of. More and more business income, income generated through business and economic activity, is showing up in the personal income tax program because of these flow-through entities. And the service is reporting that, and we're seeing the same thing, that especially the ability of to create limited liability companies and limited liability partnerships and who can own them has created a tremendous amount of flexibility in the economy for business organizations, and a lot of that money is now showing up in the personal income tax program. So we did, Senator Morse had asked us a specific question sort of offline, and we'd be glad to provide it to the rest of the committee.
I'm going to ask that you make please. That available, okay. Please. I just scanned it, and it looks like a very useful document. Representative Smith.
Thank you, Chair Johnson. I assume this is the time to ask just an open question. Okay. If you were talking to Joe Citizen, small business owner, mm-hmm. And they asked you the question, why does the larger share of my revenue go to the federal government than to the state? How would you respond to that? I heard on the radio, and I can't remember if it was on Lars, but I heard an entrepreneur talk about how they had just written a large check to the Fed and got a refund from the state. And I'm trying to...
Well, Representative, I might interject that having just e-filed my taxes Thursday, that's in fact the circumstance that I face. I have a larger tax bill to the federal government, and I'm getting a refund from the state of Oregon, which is a bit surprising to me, actually. It's normally the other way around. Normally the last few years I've paid a little more to the state of Oregon and gotten a smaller refund. I actually gotten a small refund from the federal government, so I was a little surprised about that.
So sophisticated Bahrain shelters here.
Good thing we passed that legislation.
Yeah, good thing.
Watch out for this policy.
Dallas?
Okay, no. I'm just curious.
Well, there are probably two things that contribute to that. One is the federal government, with the tax reductions that have been put in place by the Congress over the last several years, has changed withholding tables to try to make sure that that money is, you know, back out with taxpayers. And so you may be under withheld or underestimated for federal, when in the past you weren't because of the way the tables were structured. We haven't restructured our tables as frequently. And so we may have a little bit of a bias of a little bit of over-withholding in our tables.
Perhaps. Okay. Yeah. Okay. That was explained.
Representative Smith, does that
Dallas? I was just going to summarize saying we'll get an amendment to the bill and to the full committee with two cats as amended, and I'll be working with Representative Smith on that. LC could get it assigned to the subcommittee to get it.
Chair Johnson, Dallas and I are whispering to each other. We thought that perhaps we should have a meeting with OBA and the credit union folks just to share with them this, and perhaps you would...
I would encourage that, and if I can...
Join us?
Absolutely. Okay. Absolutely. Okay. I would just say, by way of conclusion, I thought your presentation materials were excellent. You were responsive to the committee. I appreciate the time you took with me as the chair to come and visit on your budget, and I just think this was a very well-organized, very well-done presentation.
Counties as well.
And last but not least, I am very enthusiastic for the... Oh, we need carriers. I'm very enthusiastic for the work that we're going to do on this lien bill. I think this could be one of the most important pieces of legislation passed by this body this session. I'd be looking for volunteer carriers to fill.
What are you looking at me?
Department of Revenue, Rep Crump. They come hand in hand.
Do I hear a volunteer? Representative Krupp would be delighted to carry this to full, and we need to do...
House and Senate members also.
House and Senate might as well stick, and I'll be happy to do it on the Senate side, given that my colleagues have all vaporized.
That's usually when they get nominated.
Oh, when they're gone?
Now they're nervous.
Do they know what
that's me.
I'd like to say that we really appreciate the interest that this committee has shown in the department. It is really wonderful for us to have you engage in the way that you have. We work for you, and we have a partnership with you just like we do with the counties and other state agencies and other revenue departments around the country. And so to have this quality of interaction and interest is, we've really appreciated it. And we've learned a lot more about what we do just because of the questions you've asked us.
Well, thank you very much. And now that we're all knee deep in bouquets, that we've talked to each other.
I thought you were going to say we're knee deep in something else.
I am going to close the work session on House Bill 5066 and without objection declare the committee adjourned until 8:30 tomorrow morning.